From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Even though the pandemic is over, it's still at the forefront of a Washington State School superintendent race because everybody's blaming Chris Reichdahl, trying to get him kicked out of his sweet $150,000 a year job. We can talk about that as well as how loopholes in Washington state law can protect abusive school staff. Is Seattle a walkable city? I wanted to talk about this just really quickly, Spike, because this is the kind of story that I see from Crosscut that just I find it to be deeply upsetting.
Okay.
The short answer here is yes, right? Seattle is indeed a walkable city.
Okay.
You can walk everywhere. I walk from Eastlake over to Queen Anne, up to Capitol Hill. I'm walking all over the place. But Crosscut is trying to make it seem as if too many deaths are happening as people are walking around. Too many people getting, just minding their own business, chasing after beautiful butterflies. La Papillon, they say.
Yeah.
La Papillon as they're chasing. And then, boom, they get headed on over.
Yeah, in traffic, yeah.
You're in your living room, minding your own business, spending some time with Gam Gam. And then a 1968 VW bug comes right in through the second story. Boom! You're dead, right?
Okay.
You could be
horrible
in the middle of Lake Union. In a kayak, all of a sudden, bubbles start emerging. What is that? Is that some kind of,
Leviathan.
Cthulhu-esque creature popping up underneath me? No, it's a scion. Boom, you're dead. It's not walkable. Cars everywhere. You're going to die.
Uh-huh.
What, like, okay. Washington was the first state to commit to zero traffic fatalities. So how to tell people that you failed at a task before it's even started 101, right? Zero traffic fatalities?
Well, you aim high.
No, you aim realistic, right?
So we're looking for just seven.
So Seattle is accounting for 20% of all traffic deaths in Seattle is Aurora Avenue North, a.k.a. State Highway 99, and it's a north-south alternative to Interstate 5, according to Elizabeth Wooten, who's the Seattle Department of Transportation Senior Capital Projects Coordinator, which is a job title that I'm sure that when she was five, when she was asked
what do you want to be when you grow up?
By her guidance counselor, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be the Seattle Department of Transportation Senior Capital Projects Coordinator. That's what I want to be. So the biggest problem here is that you got foot traffic and minimal protections for pedestrians. You know what your best protection as a pedestrian is?
What?
It's a little technique that I learned from Mr. Monson back in the day when he was talking about this issue.
Okay.
He broke it down like this. Now, everybody write this down, because I had to write this down when because this is what Dory did.
Okay.
He had everybody write this down, because it's very important. And
okay.
That's how I remember this lesson, because Monson made it very clear back in the day. You look left. Write this down.
Okay.
Or you look left, and then you look right. Okay?
And then what?
And then you look left again. And then you look right.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And then if you don't see any cars, you walk. That right there, my
genius.
Friends, that's a Dory Monson original right there. And that is how you avoid pedestrian deaths. Like, this is nonsense. What do you mean? Like, this is all trash. People know how to cross the street. If you take risks, that's on you, right? This is nothing new. This is silliness in its entirety. And I think that we should all just kind of do away with this. Oh, cars coming out of nowhere, killing people. It's just very stupid. It's very silly.
So the section of Aurora Avenue I'm sure they're referring to is the section between what is the tunnel, which used to be the viaduct area.
Yeah.
And when by the time you get all the way up to, how far do you got to go? Past the zoo, past Green Lake, there's no intersections.
Right.
There's one crosswalk at Green Lake. So people are forced to walk for blocks to go down below a tunnel or above a walkway, overhand walkway.
Or you can look left
and then
look right.
No. Even if you look left, look right, look left, right, and then go, you still got to cross four lanes of traffic, sometimes with a median, a Jersey wall barrier in between.
Okay.
Because I've seen people take the Dodge of Death across Aurora Avenue,
sure.
numerous times.
Right, but that's your fault, right? That's not...
No, it's user fault.
It's
absolutely.
User fault,
absolutely.
Right? So it's saying that it's not a walkable city. I mean, so what you're saying is that there's one section of road that's inconvenient for about, a couple hundred people a day, and that somehow is... Seattle's not a walkable city. What are we going to do?
No, I'm with you. It's hyperbolic, and it looks at one tiny little section of the city. Most of the deaths happen on Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also blame, to your point, which is very true, Look up before you look left and look right and look left. Look up. Put your phone away.
Yes.
People are walking blind with their phone in their hands.
Did I tell you guys about the curse that's happened to me ever since I did tell you about this. But Laura, are you familiar with the curse that's befallen me since There's a curse that has befallen me ever since I moved into Seattle proper, which I never did ever in my life until I moved into a metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be my subconscious trying to tell me that this is a dangerous place for me to be.
Okay.
That I don't belong here, because what happens is that previously in my life I would walk up to a crosswalk, no phone in my hands. I would look at the sign, and if it was an orange hand, I would say, "Aha, I am to stop." If it was a white walking man, I would say, "A little weird that it's a white guy, but I shall walk across the street nonetheless." Okay. Lots of colors in the rainbow.
There really are.
Could be a green person, could be a blue person. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any difference to me. Now what happens, and I'm not sure what it is, other than I must have upset some gypsy as I was in SeaTac flying into Seattle the last time, and she said, "You will try, destined death is coming for you, Jack Stein, for pushing over my Chick-fil-A as you walk past me." Now what happens is that when I walk up to a crosswalk, regardless of whether it is orange or the little white man, I will take out my phone and start looking at things as I'm going through a crosswalk, habitually. I have never done that before in my life, but now every crosswalk, I have to actively fight my hand. It's like Idle Hands. It's like that movie from the 90s.
Sure.
I have to fight my right hand from going into my pocket and taking out my phone and looking at trash on the internet.
Do you feel that this is because you're so averse to not making practical use of your time, efficient use of your time?
Mm-hmm.
If you stop at an intersection, I could be looking at my phone right now. This is a moment I could be gaining smarter.
No, I think it's because I have a death wish. I think this might be the culmination of a divorce and, you know, years of child abuse.
Neglect, because they're still living with your ex. Okay, okay. That's based.
Cat withdrawals, divorce, all that.
You know what? It wouldn't be the worst.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it would be the worst way to go, right? And so,
I know people have been trying to back over you for the last 8 months.
It's happened numerous times in my life.
Where people are just ripping through driveways or intersections when they're also ignoring signs.
Exactly.
Good point, Spike. Maybe Seattle has the death wish.
Aha! That's what it is. It's not me, it's you, as I said to my ex-wife. So Chris Reichtal is running for this superintendent of schools again.
Yeah. His third term he's seeking.
Yeah. Got a couple other competition out there, though, and it's an all online campaign, right? So that was the previous one.
Right. Last time he won was 2020.
Right.
It was running in mid-pandemic.
Right, which is during COVID.
Yeah.
And so, but the point that was being made in this article is that people still remember the pandemic to such a degree that they still have schools or children in the school system. Mm-hmm. And so they are saying to themselves, why would I go with this guy when his resume is so bad? If you look at the stats on kids affected by COVID, I think it was 1 in 10 suicide ideation.
Yeah.
You had an increase in suicide among teenagers and adolescents during that time period.
Test score drops, loss of learning, years behind.
Truancies, tardies.
Yeah.
I mean, you have kids who don't even know how to read. One of the saddest pictures that I saw during the pandemic is a little girl. She's 5. It's a black girl. And she's got her backpack on, and she's got her hair's all done, and she's wearing a cute little dress. And her mom is taking her to her first day of school, and she then realizes that she needs to open a Gmail account for her little girl because it's
homeschooling.
It's remote learning.
Yeah, yeah. Or in the homeschooling, you're right.
What does a 5-year-old need with a Gmail account like that?
Yeah.
So this is the kind of thing that people like Reichtal brought to these kids, right? Now, in some cases, they were correct to do so. In other instances, they were totally wrong to do so, particularly when it pertains to the length and the duration of what they made these kids go through.
Well, you're true. And I know that it was more of a gubernatorial decision through Jay Inslee than it was a Chris Reichtal decision to keep schools closed longer than the national norm.
Right.
Many different states went back early, sometimes too early. You're right. There was a lot of different instances that we can point to. But can you blame Reichtal for the things that were out of his hand? You got to blame somebody for all the mental health issues, the learning issues.
The superintendent is kind of a symbolic role. It's not really, you're not setting policy.
No.
You're just advising policy, and you're just suggesting to lawmakers what they should do. So I think that even that, though, kind of the wafts of that still irritate people.
You're right. Somebody's going to have to pay for all that, those mistakes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and so right. And so I hope the best for them in this upcoming election.
Well, all the candidates are very similar in their policies for the most part. They want to put an emphasis on financing schools, giving the schools the resources needed to be effective, about mental health being an important part of learning.
Yeah.
Speaking to the mental health crisis caused by the closures of the pandemic. So I think we're okay on any one of these three guys, I think, getting the gig. We're probably getting good shape. It's not like we have somebody who's ranting and raving from a perspective of closing schools and no freedom, freedom, freedom. We don't. Right. I don't mean to be pejorative. We don't seem to have a MAGA candidate in the mix.
KUOW has a piece about how loopholes in Washington state law can protect abusive school staff. Basically, what this is, if I can break it down for people, is that in almost every single state in the union, because of the way the teachers' unions work, it is very, very difficult to try to get rid of a teacher. It's also very difficult to try to get rid of coaches unless you can actually prove that there's some kind of criminal action in there. So everybody knows that you need a certification to work in schools, but there's a rule out there that does not cover staff who are not certified, like coaches, as an example.
Teaching assistants, coaches, office staff, and support staff.
There's also very lax rules around reporting abusive coaches that may get jobs at other school districts. So, for instance, there could be a coach out there who shoves a kid, is rude to a kid, maybe uses a racial slur, and because the reporting mechanism is so lax, that person could be let go, and then they just kind of slide over to another school district, and then they go, I could teach dodgeball to these kids.
Sure.
And they just kind of move on with it. One of the things that I kind of was reminded of in reading this story is everybody was freaking out about drag queens back in the day.
Sure.
Everybody was freaking out about, trans people going and teaching their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was freaking out about learning gender-affirming care.
Mm-hmm.
I have been ranting and raving for almost the entirety of my media career about the rates of abuse that occur within the public school system. And nobody listens to poor old Jack Stein, despite all of his research. If you look at the American Academy of Pediatrics, 1 in 10 children will experience sexual, physical, or emotional abuse at the hands of a teacher. And so I think that people need to reevaluate where their priorities are when we talk about who we're yelling and screaming at. Because it's not drag queen story hour in the middle of a bed and breakfast, you know what I mean, in Austin, Texas.
I hear you. Or on a camping trip at a jamboree somewhere.
Right, yeah. Right. It's like what
I hear you.
You are statistically much more likely. I think a child is 33% more likely to be the recipient of abuse outside of the home, specifically at a school, than if they were at a different location. Which is insane, right? Some reason, like every time I was like, hey, you guys, we should probably pay attention to public schools, everyone was like, Jack, I'm focused on that guy who's dressed like a lady. I don't have time to read your facts and your statistics. What are you talking about? I'm like, I know, but like if we look at what's going on at public schools, it's actually pretty rough. And everybody was like, I'm more focused on that guy who's dressed like a lady. You know what I mean? It's just, it doesn't compute to me. It doesn't make any sense when the stats are so strong.
Are we going to be able to close these loopholes that put our kids vulnerable to abuse, make our kids vulnerable to abuse, because of the power of the unions, of the teachers' unions?
Mm.
I mean, because, you know, I know we're very solution-oriented on this. And protecting kids, everybody, when you ask, and protecting kids is top priority. But how do you deal with the power of a union that protect? And there are union protections for a reason. I think they're valid. I think it's good that teachers have tenure. I don't think unfireable should be the standard. I mean, there are things that teachers need to be let go for.
Mm-hmm.
And your point about not being able to track somebody who's lost a job because of actions,
right?
Not being able to know where they, maybe a registry, maybe the requirement. Okay, keep your job, but everybody wants to, you know, let the buyer beware. Let a different school district know what they're getting, and then make the decision based on that.
This is what we do. We ban all books, and that way schools can't teach anything, and then we close all the schools. That's my solution.
Learn at home, he says.
Ah, yes. Uh-oh. Laura has sounded the alarm, letting us know that we are being boring. And that is our walk-off music to segue to another story. How a Connecticut... Thank you for that, Laura, by the way. I appreciate that. That's Laura's...
Anytime.
That's Laura's...
Truly, anytime.
That's Laura's new production button that's being used.
Wow.
It's to signify that we have gone on for too long on a particular subject, and Laura is losing interest and beginning to fall asleep. A Connecticut middle school won the battle against cell phones. Talking about culture, talking about lifestyle, they did so, by the way, at this Connecticut school, but basically by having very strict policies when it came to cell phones in the school. Anybody using common sense could understand how this works, but I have noticed more and more, I know this is kind of a trope-ish talking point, how addicted everybody is to their cell phones. I was walking through my apartment complex today. There was a leak in my apartment complex on the bottom floor. This is why I live on the on a different floor.
Smart.
Because there's a big old leak down there. And so they have all these fans set up. And they're blowing all the air out.
Yeah.
So there's a group of guys down there and a lady down there. And they are dressed in their work gear, presumably to tear up the carpet and to re-carpet that portion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it's really bad.
Okay.
And as I walk up to these guys, they're all on their phones. They're not talking to each other. There's about six of them.
Yeah.
Back in the day, they would have been all chatting each other up. Hey, did you see the ball game? What about this thing?
How about the Mariners?
Hey,
huh?
Hey, Bill Clinton sure is a weird, creepy guy. Am I right or am I right? All kinds of jokes.
Been a while.
Flying around, right?
Yeah.
What I see, though, is a bunch of big, burly dudes, all neck at a 45-degree angle, looking at their phones, not talking to each other, not saying anything.
Yeah.
So it's basically like a scene from The Shining. You know what I mean? Where I was like, I rounded the corner. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, Tony.
They're all wearing the same outfit, right? Standing in front of the elevator looking at their phone.
They're all in the same outfit.
Wow, that's creepy.
And they're just looking at their phones. And so I was thinking to myself, this is a real, we got to do something about this, right?
And getting them early in the school is smart, man.
Yeah, that's what
you said. Basic common sense. They all the kids drop their phones off when coming into a classroom, pick them up when they're walking out. What kind of, I'd love to know the safe, common sense things, because every school should follow this.
Well, the kids were able to have their phones on them, but they weren't allowed to be on, and they had to be in the bag, and you weren't allowed to have it out.
Fair.
And then you turned it on after you couldn't even have it out during
any kind of class. But from transit to hall time, class to class to class, that's probably when
You can only have it out during the breaks, during the actual allotted
time. Really
I think
smart.
That's the only thing that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very strict.
Zero
otherwise,
lockdown.
They'll be sneaky. Like,
yeah.
Put it in a box. Lock the box.
Excellent use of the producer horn, by the way, Laura.
Thank you.
Can we get some feedback on the producer horn? Because
let
us know what you think at 888-973-5476.
Put it on speed dial, they all say. Yeah.
Conservative pundits embrace Jerry Seinfeld's comments about the extreme left killing comedy. I saw this story when it broke a week ago about Jerry Seinfeld and how comedy is dying.
Yeah.
And all it made, I just felt bad for Jerry because he obviously hasn't watched any new media. He has no idea what he's talking about.
I couldn't agree with you more.
It's the most lewd, not woke comedy is being produced right now, and it's totally mainstream.
Yep.
And I have no idea
is.
What...
I'm shocked by the stuff I see come out of sitcoms.
Right. So, Jerry, we got to talk to Jerry when we get back right after this.
If spotted owls are protected, surely Bigfoot enjoys that status.
Or base.
Because I don't want to pass out in the studio. That's bad radio. Cringe or base, the fun segment we like to do every single day. 133, Aaron Granillo. Wow, that's some excellent timing there from the newsroom. Conservative pundits have embraced Jerry Seinfeld's comments on the extreme left killing comedy, and I have never read a more out-of-touch and deeply cringy comment as I have from Jerry Seinfeld. So, Seinfeld was talking about how wokeness is a big deal and how the left can't be funny anymore, is what he's saying.
That's what he's saying.
Can't make any more jokes anymore. You can't be raunchy anymore because the woke left is ruining comedy because, you know, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia hasn't been on the air for 20 years, you know, because that show where a preacher or a pastor literally goes to being a crack addict who sells himself on the street. And that's done under the guise of comedy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it has never occurred. Or even like, you know, his friend Larry David didn't put out a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm where there is a literal Nazi child that is portrayed in that show. Oh, wait, that did happen. Or Veep was a thing. What is this like weird... Like what he's saying by saying that the left killed comedy is he's actually doing it kind of tacitly admitting that he doesn't consume any new media, which is really weird.
Or at least he doesn't find it funny to what Jerry Seinfeld deems funny.
Sure.
I mean, what have we gotten rid of? I mean, your points are all I can't watch Saturday Night Live anymore.
Right.
Not just because it's not funny, but it's not funny because it's cleaned up. And woke, they're making more crotch jokes.
Yeah.
The stuff Saturday Night Live says on 11:30 on a Saturday night these days, Maybe I'm old, but it's jaw-dropping to me.
Yeah, it's pretty raunchy.
Pretty raunchy stuff. Is Jerry just missed the ethnic jokes? The Archie Bunker-style humor? The stuff that no one should ever say out loud anywhere again on the face of the earth, let alone in a sitcom?
Sure. I mean, he's good friends with Dave Chappelle. I mean, The Dreamer was the most successful comedy special last year, and that is just littered with ethnic humor.
Yep.
I don't really understand what, you know, Tim Dillon is probably one of the greatest working comedians right now, or even Shane Gillis. Those guys do all kinds of crazy material, but they make it work. So my perception of this is just somebody who's ignorant about comedy. And it's a weird thing to say about Jerry Seinfeld, but clearly he's not taking in any new media. If you go on YouTube, you will find people with comedy channels that all they do is make fun of wokeism and leftism, mm-hmm. and it's hilarious. It's really good content.
Is that what Jerry's after? Is a seat at that table? Is he after a conservative audience?
Maybe.
Pandering to, hey, man, the woke killed comedy.
I just don't. Do we have the audio from this, Laura? Because there's the TikTok and the thing. I don't know if you want to play it, really. I don't know if he swears in it, but if we could pull it, it's really kind of... It's kind of a boomer take. It's just kind of a...
That's my thought.
It's just kind of a bad... Like, if he had said this 7 years ago, I would have agreed with him. But looking at it now, it just doesn't make any sense. He says stand-up comedians are now the ones who, quote-unquote, have freedom, according to Seinfeld. That's really self-aggrandizing. There are people who have built careers out of making fun of leftists. They make tons of money doing it, and they're very funny. So I don't really understand what he's talking about. He goes, with certain comedians now, people are having fun with them, stepping over the line and laughing about it. But again, it's the stand-ups that really have the freedom to do it because no one else gets the blame if it doesn't go down well.
Is that network censorship he's bemoaning?
Maybe.
Because, I mean, you talk about specials that are great.
Yeah.
Right? And we're talking about primetime sitcoms. Who used to be free to throw about racial stereotypes, racial slurs, with a laugh track.
Yeah.
You know, Archie Bunker's All in the Family, which is iconic for inappropriate humor. The first year had no laugh track, failed miserably. If you put a laugh track under All in the Family, it becomes one of the greatest shows of all time, telling the exact same humor.
Yeah, I think that probably had to do with the spacing,
it softens up the punch, the comedic punch. It's okay for me to laugh at this because somebody else already is in the background there.
Laura, do you agree with Jerry, or do you think that Jerry's... Because I think he's just dead wrong about this. I don't see any...
Oh, I think he's completely wrong.
Thank you so much, Laura. That's why you get to keep your job. It just does... this is what people do, is they feign victimhood from the quote-unquote woke left.
Yes.
They feign it. And they talk about things like cancel culture, which really doesn't exist. It still to this day does. The only people who've ever really been canceled is like Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein. Rightfully so.
Clearly, yes.
Right? So, and I would also say for about 6 months of his life, Donald Trump was canceled because he was off of all social media. But then he got right back on social media. So he was let back on Facebook, right? The whole, like, when people say, like, oh, the woke is coming after us for making funny jokes. There was a guy who did a stand-up special, which was on Netflix, in which he did a domestic violence joke. Do you remember that?
No.
It's a 24-year-old kid. He did a domestic... I won't repeat the joke, but he did a domestic violence joke. And some people got really upset about it. And the CEO of Netflix said, I'm not taking it down. I'm leaving it up there in the interest of free speech. Is that the woke left taking over culture? I mean, that a CEO out of Los Gatos, California, which isn't exactly the most, you know, red state
it's not the Bible Belt.
He says, I'm leaving it up there in the interest of free speech. Like, there is a myth that has been perpetrated to conservatives that a bunch of blue-haired lesbians on college campuses somehow dictate the trends which occur within comedy and within culture, and it's just not true. It just simply is not true, but it is so pervasive that people believe it, but it's so hollow that when you analyze it, it begins to fall apart immediately.
And the market dictates comedy. If there's an audience for it, someone will sell it.
Right.
What about Netflix? Yeah. Guy's like, I'm not taking this down. And he can say free speech, and I respect that he's flying that flag, but if nobody was watching this Netflix show, it wouldn't be on, regardless of what the guy said.
Sure.
There's an audience for something. It'll get on. It'll find its way on the air. And there are so many venues that are happy to take unwoke material from you.
I'll give you another example. The UFC is arguably one of the best new sporting endeavors of the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. It makes billions of dollars. Dana White lets the people who work for him say whatever they want to say. Is the woke left trying to cancel UFC? Like, where are these woke people trying to cancel things and getting it done? I need someone to explain that to me. Give me an example, singular, of when that has occurred, and I will concede this point.
I would argue, just for the sake of trying to find an example, that you can't make racial slurs in primetime network comedy. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good effect.
But that's not the example I'm looking for.
I really can't find one. I want
the woke. Laura, can you think of one?
Someone who has successfully
canceled. Removed because of the content of their material and their career is over.
Not Shane Gillis. Not Louis C.K.
Louis C.K. even bounced back.
He sold out Madison Square Garden. Yeah. I mean, like, what is this cancel culture nonsense that people keep talking about? I just don't see it anywhere. Like, Dave Chappelle, doesn't happen. All those people showed up at Netflix and they wanted that special taken down because of his anti-trans jokes. Yeah. Still up there. I could go see it right now. Like, where is
Didn't Kevin Hart say all that homophobic stuff?
And he's coming out with a new movie this summer.
He's getting a huge award. He just got a huge award at the Kennedy Center.
Right.
He was honored as for the Twain Award.
Yeah.
Right.
What's his name? One of my favorite comedians, Tracy Morgan. He had that awful joke about, or that tweet he said about his kid, where he would stab his son if he found out that he was gay.
But there's a market for him, so he's not canceled.
But that's the thing, is that people tried to cancel him and it didn't happen. Do we have an example?
Next line says Kathy Griffin. Did she bounce back from the Trump head photo?
I think that was more her choice to stay out of the fray.
Right, but that's not her being canceled. That's people saying, Kathy, please don't hold up a decapitated
head in the name of comedy.
In the name of comedy. Right? I mean,
a few more people on the right for that one, too. We're talking about the extreme left canceling people.
Right. I mean, like, I just don't. If someone can please give me an example of cancel culture, we will read it on the air. Like, I will.
Roseanne Barr?
No, doesn't count, right?
Yeah, I don't think she counts.
She still has a career. She's still going on speaking engagements.
Well, she's about to launch a new show that is literally, her and Tim Allen are working together on a project that is unwoke.
Right. I mean, like,
there's an audience.
Canceled means that you can no longer make money based on what it is that you are doing. Roseanne Barr is dating Michael Flynn.
Really?
Yeah, she's a wacky.
She's thriving.
Dude. She's doing great with her. I mean, she's very popular on Twitter. Like, where's the cancellations here, right?
Yeah, she didn't have to go back to school, get a degree to be an accountant.
No, she didn't end up like, what's his name from Different Strokes?
Gary Coleman?
Coleman. Working as a security guard.
Right, a little time.
I mean, somebody please give me an example of cancel culture that's a legitimate one, and I will concede my point. We'll take a really quick break. Anybody ever have a panic attack after just reading an innocuous social media post? I did. I did yesterday.
You're kidding.
So we can all laugh about my panic attack because I read just a regular social media post and all of a sudden my entire world collapsed around me. And I threw myself into such a panic state that I had to take medication to try to come
back. This last night?
This last night.
Glad you're laughing. That's a healthy recovery.
We'll have a good laugh at my expense when we get back right after this. There are no stupid questions.
There are only stupid answers.
Skipping this segment today, probably won't ever do it again, but that's okay. No, sorry. No, Andrew, that's my fault. I should have let you know in advance. Actually, that was Laura's job. It's not my fault at all. I had a panic attack yesterday.
I think
last
we need to talk
night.
About this.
So what happened was I was looking at social media, minding my own business, trying to think about the show for today. But this was last night, so I'm going through trying to find stories and whatnot. I come across a little question that somebody posted on social media. It said, "People over 40 without kids, how do you feel?" Thought to myself, "I'm almost 40. I'm 36 years old. I don't have any children. I desperately want children." Obviously, this is right up my alley in terms of content that I should be reading right now. And then all of a sudden, I start reading it, Spike. And as I'm scrolling through, hundreds and hundreds of people talking about didn't have kids, didn't get married. It's not so bad, but you got to get used to being lonely. Hang out with my brother's kids. It's weird because my kids would probably look like my brother's kids. Super lonely, though. I've learned to embrace being lonely. Loneliness is probably,
I'm seeing a theme.
Oh, man, it was so bad. And so I start thinking to myself, I'm going to be lonely. I'm not going to have any children. I'm too old to get married again. What am I going to do? I'm 36 years old. Who's going to want to marry a 36-year-old who's already been divorced? And then I start thinking to myself, well, then I'm not going to have any children. I'm going to be stuck in this very expensive apartment with all my very expensive things all by myself. Who am I going to share my expensive things with? I can't be codependent on my coworkers forever. Obviously, at a certain point in time, things are going to go horribly wrong for me. I'm going to be a spinster, a shut-in, a Scrooge, removed from love and affection from other human beings. And I will die a lonely death in a pauper's grave, much like Mozart. That's what I thought.
You spun yourself up a nice little tragedy there, man.
So basically what happened over the course of about 15 minutes, I started spinning. And I just started going down this crazy wormhole thinking to myself, there is no bright future for me whatsoever with little children running around. And then I realized that I was having a panic attack. Now, I don't often get panic attacks, not anymore. But it happens on occasion, and I have medication for it that I take maybe once or twice a year for it. So the jar, basically, when I take it out of the, or the bottle, when I take it out of my medicine cabinet, I have to go off the top, right?
Good. That's good.
So, I was in such a cycle yesterday that for the first time in months, I had to take this anti-anxiety medication because I was just going down this spiral of my life will be perpetually lonely henceforth. And it made me realize that or at least afterwards, after I was intoxicated and calming down, I realized that social media is that powerful where I don't think that people are as aware of how it affects them on a regular basis. But when you're reading about the misery and suffering of other human beings and them trying to rationalize that suffering, that is a profound existential crisis that I think permeates many people in ways that they do not actually fully understand.
You know what I'm going to blame for all this? Your algorithm.
Why do you say?
Because, I'm going to introduce you to my good friend, Ron Max, and I love Ronnie. He's a friend of one of my childhood friends.
Phil?
Ron.
Jeff?
Ron Max. Single. 15 years your senior.
Okay.
Never married, never children.
You're not making me feel better.
Living the life.
I want to have kids.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't want to live the life. I want to have children.
We'll go a different direction then. You know my youngest, Darby, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was 4 years older than you are right now when Darby was born. Yeah, you're not a done deal. You're not a dried up. You're not a raisin. You're still a grape.
I feel like I'm a raisin.
No. You bring more to the. I mentioned my buddy Ron because you bring so much more to the table, and I love Ron Max, but you bring so much more to the table
than Ron.
Than Ron does.
What about Jeff?
Jeff's a solid citizen.
Okay. All right.
More than a raisin.
I think your future is wide open. To quote
sure,
them, buddy.
I'm not so much worried about me, but what I'm mostly worried about is that it's I don't think people realize, and at least I didn't realize this until last night, that just taking in something like that, I would have never had to read that amount of information about other people's suffering had I not exposed myself to social media. Laura, any comments out there? Any questions, any concerns? You're typing vigorously.
Oh, I'm going through the Seinfeld comments.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What are people saying?
Just a list of people
who've been canceled?
What?
Who have technically not been canceled, in my opinion.
Okay, perfect. Cool. Okay, we're going to talk about this. I feel like we need to talk about this because Jerry Seinfeld said something stupid about how comedy is dead. Yes, my man, Andrew. We're going to address this when we get back because I want to hear about the people who are, quote unquote, been canceled. And I want to refute this, as well as talking about almost 40% of local election officials surveyed report threats of abuse, according to a new report. That's 4 in 10 for you math aficionados out there. The Olympics are nearly here, and I had no idea, and I don't think anybody else did either.
I'm having to prep my family for the Olympics, actually. I'll tell you why.
The United States is poised to ease restrictions on marijuana in a historic shift, but it'll remain a controlled substance. We'll talk about that when we get back right after this as well.